Prime ministers
and presidents
may come and go, but the certainty of exemplary entertainment on the Midweek Drive
and the Midweek Drive Morning Edition
remains.
Time for another Zoomer on the Midweek Drive for Siren Radio and SouthsideBroadcasting.podbeam.com, keeping the COVID-19 bugs at bay.
It's a lovely day tomorrow. Tomorrow is a lovely day. Come and feast your tear-dimmed eyes on tomorrow's clear blue skies. If today heart is weary, if every little thing looks gray, just forget your troubles and learn to say, tomorrow is a lovely day.
Certain magical things in the media world which actually become part of our general expectation of the good things in life, and definitely one of the good things in life has to be the monthly views of Arthur Weingarten and of course the awesomely wonderful Annette Andre. And Annette's back again for some more magical times. And Annette, I believe this is going to be your first ever official Zoom delivered audio missive from San Diego.
It is. And I was just saying to Arthur, you know, I've done a couple of Zoom things now, but I still find them a little bit daunting when it's all starting up and you're getting ready and
it's that sort of sense of anticipation though that surely is the business of show. It's what we've got in these socially isolated days. Phil Leonis has just wrapped up his first piece with us, and he was stressing as well, but all went well. That's the important thing.
There was an old rambling stone wall at the rear of our property, high in New York's Hudson Valley. It was a beautiful example of a native art intended to be practical. In this instance, to hold back a steep, forested hill, strewn with boulders left behind from the Ice Age glacier that swept across that land millions of years ago. For some inexplicable reason, I've been thinking about that wall for several weeks now. ever since the passing of Dame Vera Lynn. Although I knew Vera through friendship with her daughter, that acquaintance had no relevance to the pairing of the woman to my stone wall. Rather, it was her indelible image as the voice of hope and courage during Britain's struggle to survive the daily horrors of World War II that conjured this unlikely bonding. Dame Vera's death came during this pandemic, a time when the world is held hostage to a living force of nature, unrelenting in its march to survive. Only a leap of faith can explain the trust I invested in that wall to hold back the mountain's irresistible need to continue its downhill journey, with my same need to believe that science will create a magic bullet to conquer the deadly virus. But I sense something vital is missing in today's battle to overcome this merciless enemy. And that something is what a young Vera Lynn gave to a nation those many years ago when all seemed doomed. Her voice on the wireless singing songs about bluebirds flying over the white cliffs of Dover and the certainty that one day all will come right, just you wait and see, was the tonic her magic bullet needed to stiffen the resolve of a believed people. And that's exactly what we're missing at this time of global disaster. A voice like Vera's to leap the static of a conflicted reality with a message of hope, courage, and the determination to weather the storm. If this sounds simplistic, it is. It doesn't take algorithms or a university degree to realize that we're all in the same lifeboat, that each of us is a small but vital link in the chain needed to keep the virus at bay. But so far, it seems to me, and in spite of all the warnings and medics dispense, we've become too selfish, too shut off from empathy, to pull together at the small cost of some individual freedoms. Like Vera, I believe that one day we'll meet again in a better place. And yes, the bluebirds will once more soar over the white cliffs of Dover. Until then, I'm willing to wait and see, no matter how long it takes. But hang on, now that I think of it, we don't need another Vera Lynn to rally us. The original is still here, ready to bridge the years and once again be the voice of hope and courage. All we have to do is listen to her recordings and let her words work the magic as they did some 80 years ago.
Just you wait and see. I'll never forget the people I met braving those angry skies. I remember well as the shadows fell, the light of hope in their eyes. And though I'm far away, I still can hear them say, thumbs up. For when the dawn comes up, there'll be bluebirds over the white cliffs of Dover. Tomorrow, just you wait and see. There'll be love and laughter and peace ever after. Tomorrow, when the world is free, there'll The shepherd will tend his sheep. The valley will bloom again. And Jimmy will go to sleep in his own little room again. There'll be bluebirds over the white cliffs of Dover tomorrow, just you wait and see.
Absolutely superb. I mean, it's so wonderful. I can actually demonstrate, not only have I got the hard copy of the biography there, Annette André, Where Have I Been All My Life, but excited beyond measure that it's now available online. I even have the Kindle version as well. There we are.
Look at that.
Yeah, high technology. And talking about high technology, we've also been joined by a wonderful actress who was listening intently to your views.
I saw, but I didn't dare look because I would have
blocked. Concentration, that's very important. Sarah Huntley, welcome back to the Midweek Drive. How are you?
I'm fine. That was wonderful. I so loved it. Loved it.
Thank you. Yes, I sort of looked, and then I had to look back because I wanted to look and see.
And actually, I think I could hear a little bird in the background there.
Oh, probably. I'm outside, and we've got loads of birds around here. Mm. We feed them, and we talk to them, and we do all those things.
How yeah. lovely.
It's yes. part and parcel of life in San Diego. Sarah, any questions you'd like to put to Annette about Vera Lynn, or indeed anything else in her awesome career?
Oh gosh, well there's just so much I want to ask you. In fact, I've almost forgotten all about COVID today. I've just literally had my two best friends from drama school over 33 years ago. We sat in the garden, so it was legal. Right. And we just read some scripts together for the Windsor Festival, trying out things. And it was so nice just to actually do some reading. But I was going to say, we've been swapping silly stories and things that have made us probably life-enhancing stories that make us the people that we are today.
Right.
So could you tell the listeners, you've had such a fascinating life. Are there moments in your career when you have felt really down and then something comes along and you go back and you really relive that story and you think, What gives you your tenacity? What fires you? What keeps you going? In the sense of, we were just saying, so for instance, my two friends, one of them was very big in the RSC when we first left, and then her career did something else, and then it went off, and everyone's had the waves, the peaks and the troughs and the waves.
No.
You've had such a, you have such a fantastic career. I think what this afternoon did for us is to be creative is the most important thing, and to keep pushing yourself is the most important thing. So what fires you? What fires your creativity, I suppose, is what I'm asking.
Well, because all my life I've wanted to do something creative. I mean, as a child I would play alone and I would teach, because I was a ballet dancer, I would teach ballet to this whole room of children, you know, and I'd give them names and I'd do everything and I'd tell them they were doing something, all that. And I have to do something creative. I have to be busy, and my resting times during work, I always found something to do that was, at one point I started creating clothes with collage on them so that I never sewed them myself, but I would do all the designing on it. And I did sell some and things. That sort of thing, or it didn't matter. It just had to be something I could be creative about and use your imagination, use your use my emotion, because emotion was always a big thing. And you're right, if I didn't do something, I could go down that hill very quickly. And I could be in a dense blackness. So in order to not do that, and also the other thing was, in later years, not back then, but in later years, age keeps me at it, because I'm damned if I'm going to go down with age.
I feel the same. What would you say is the part you feel that you really most connected with, that you're the proudest that you did? What I may probably had that question a million times, but if there was one particular role, what would that be?
Well,
or there, one of them?
There was, there were several that I really enjoyed, and strange ones. One that I really enjoyed was a theatre production of Streetcar Named Desire. And I played Blanche. And it was something I'd wanted to do all my life. It wasn't in London, it wasn't West End. They didn't have the time, or nor the director, to do the rehearsals that I wanted. So it was something I wanted to do, but it was not the way I wanted to do it. But I still enjoyed it, but I know I could have done so much better given the right time. And another one that always comes to mind, it was theater, and it was a Ray Cooney play called There Goes the Bride.
Oh, right. And
do you know it at all? No.
Well, I've done Ray Cooney's Run for Your Wife.
Oh, yes.
One about the taxi driver that has the two wives in the two different,
Well, this one was There Goes the Bride, and I played a figment of the imagination. I was a 20s girl, a sort of boop-boop-de-boop-boop, and I had to dance a little bit and sing a little bit and do all the 20s. And nobody else could see me except the actor Tim Barrett, who played the actor.
Do carry on.
Yes. It was just funny, and I love comedy, and I loved doing a comedy on theatre, on the stage.
I love the way Annette, you actually say that, Sarah says, do carry on. It's almost as though it was taken from a Ray Cooney spot fast that he didn't actually write. You know, do carry on. I'm off to deal with this.
Annette, I think comedy with pathos is the thing I love most. Do you like plays where it's comic, but,
they're not going to let her rest on that sort of thing. Comedy with pathos, I think, is Sarah's particular sort of passion from that point of view. So that notion of, on the one hand, we're working through that.
Yeah, I do love the opportunity to play comedy. Mm. And if it's within a play itself, it drama and comedy is even good. But yeah, I love comedy. Yeah,
I tell you what I think is very disciplined with Ray Cooney with farce is you have those quick lines, literally a syllable. You what? You have? You know? Yes, yes. And it's awful, Alex, because you know when you get very nervous on the first night and you think, if I think the lines, they'll go. I've just got to open the door, cue, go. And the minute you think, it's sort of a rhythm that you do with the lines.
Yes, it is. Yes,
and
it
then
is.
If you get out the rhythm, the whole thing pulls apart. It. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Pulls.
It's really got a big rhythm to it. You have to really.
Annette, what is the, you've had such a prestigious career and you're so beautiful and lovely, but has there ever been, I was just swapping silly stories with my friends of old friends.
Would you like to name their names, Sarah, as opposed to just leaving them as unidentified walk-ons?
They're quite good. People know them. Kate Gartside and Emma Dunverno. They've just left. I did try to get them in, but I think they were worried.
Okay, Sarah, it's okay.
No, I think they thought, I was like, we can socially distance. You come in, I'll go in, because we've been in...
Sorry, you've frozen on us for a moment. We're okay. Just stay with us. Keep the thing going. Keep them up.
What's this thing? All right. What is the funniest, one of the funniest stories? All actors have got stories of things like, you know, I walked out of my shoe in a thriller and that was at the wrong moment, and somebody else's wig's come off, and we were talking about stage flats and, you know, things going wrong. What's your story? What's the worst that's happened to you?
One of them, I was again theatre in the West End, and Simon Oates, it was a thriller. And come to the almost to the very dramatic end of the play, and I walk in, and I'm, I don't know, a drunk or an alcoholic or something. I used to play weird people like that sometimes too. And I have the gun, and I'm going to shoot. Simon's down front, and I can't remember the other actor playing with him, who's actually the bad guy. And I've got a gun in my hand. I don't know who am I going to shoot, but someone. And the actor who's the bad guy goes to turn around and shoot me, I think it was. And one of the guns doesn't go off. I shoot, that's right. One of the gun doesn't go off. And so the actor is standing there. And the next thing I see Simon move very quickly, and the actor goes down on the floor. And he turns around, looks at me, and he says, "The knife was in the boot."
I think.
Which was, of course, turned me to, I mean, I almost fell on the floor because I break up very easily.
I think.
And
I think the funniest ones are when you know people so well and they're trying not to laugh. And under nerves, people come out with the most terrible things and tension and stress, and particularly with guns not going off. I mean, you can't exactly fake that. And also people, when they're vanity, my daughter's godfather, who's I was in a murder mystery with him, and he is very, very short-sighted. So it, like you're saying, it's just got to the bit where it's gonna go, yes. And I'm saying, "Would you like another drink?" And she's an alcoholic. And he goes, "By all means." And then he's meant to go to the briefcase and get this revolver out and go right like that. And because he's so short-sighted, he couldn't get the briefcase open to shoot me. And I'm thinking, golly, that's going to change the whole. And then you get that jitter effect, don't you? Where everybody goes, "Oh my goodness me." And he managed to get out just in time. And then there was, when you have the same line come up, and in this particular play, my character kept saying, "Can I have another drink?" like that. And he always go, "By all means." But it was like, "Can I have another drink now? Can I have another drink?" And because we were all so stressed, it was a three-hander and this had happened. Everyone's nerves were put in the stress. And I said, "Can I have another drink?" And I realised we'd skipped from the first act to the third act. And then David, to alert the other actor, just went, "No!" I was like really shocked because we're going to get to the end. And I then started realising, with a murder mystery, it's terrible. Because you'll never get to the end, or you could say who the murderer was.
Oh, yes.
Right, you know, it's like that. Have you heard the old urban myth story about the mousetrap? And there's a knock at the door, and everyone said the line so many times, and the woman says, "Who are you?" And they say, "I'm the murderer." Oh my God, because you know, when you get very, very tired, you couldn't walk on and say fish fingers or say anything, like, that's it, game over, story over. And it's those stories that, because I know I was doing open air theatre with an eight-born play, and this man sort of had a nervous breakdown in the first half, and it was only a four-hander, and he walked off stage, and once again that got everybody jittery and left my friend on stage, who had all she had was a tea service or something, and then, "Oh, you're back, dear." And but the nerves hit in after that, and so the next act we're all in together, everyone's thinking calm, and actors are trained like pilots to keep their voices calm, and she said, all I had to say was, it was all about the play is all about people not realising who everybody is, misidentity. And somebody said, "I'm sorry, who are you?" And I said, "I'm sorry, my name is..." All I had to say was Ginny Whittaker. And because I was so stressed, I went, "Oh, I'm sorry, I'm Ginny Winnie 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 Whittaker." And because it was open air, Alex, it wasn't dark. And I can remember this little old lady going, "What?" looking at me. And then, you know, the other people are corpsing, aren't they? Because they're laughing. But I love those moments. So have you had a complete corpse? Have you had a complete breakdown of giggles?
Several. Absolutely several. Yeah. There was one time, I'm just remembering now, in a play, we're on tour. And I think George Sewell was in it and various people. And it was a Saturday. No, it was a... We were all living in the same sort of digs. And we decided that this particular day we'd have lunch at home. And we all pooled in and went and bought stuff and had a wonderful roast lunch with whatever it was, means. And we made a pile of parsnips and roasted them because we all loved roast parsnips, which we had. And then we went on to do the show. And there was one of the actors was dressed as a priest. He wasn't a priest, but he was dressed as a priest with a long robe and everything. And I was near him and I saw him go, sniff, sniff. He sniffs away and I sniffed away. And suddenly I realized what was happening. And I looked at him and he looked at me and we both turned upstage. And at the same time, I saw the other actors on stage all doing the same thing. Because the parsnips were having a dire effect on everyone. And it was almost a cloud of steam coming up while we're all sort of trying desperately not to say, oh my God. Yeah, so we had, and that really was a terrible corpse. I mean, we could not, none of us could move.
Annette, it could have been far worse. You could have had Miriam Margolyes in the cast, in which case it would have been a disaster. It would have been meltdown, you know, in every sense of the word. As I'm sure, sorry, you'd be able to share with us, basically. Or perhaps not.
I have worked with Miriam, and she is very fond about talking about her bowels and lavatories. She does really rather relish it a little.
There's a kind of limit of flatulence that you can actually use, even on a Zoom call, which I think is enough, really. Yeah.
I mean, I've been watching this. I was sort of a bit in awe of her when I was with her, and she was playing my mother, but she was very kind, very kind. But I realised it's something she defaults to, because when I'm watching her, she's doing a series about Australia at the moment, but it comes up every episode, something about farting or loos or something lavatorial. And when we were in Llandudno, we went into this little, we had the day off together. She likes people that stand up to her. And my daughter was 2 at the time. And I had a nanny looking after her. And I hadn't seen her all day. And it was time off. And Miriam went, right, we're going to go and do this now. And we went to this tea shop. And it was a very pretty tea shop. And sitting right across the other side was my daughter and the lady that was looking after her. And Imogen went, mommy, she went, ignore her. And then the lady was looking after just bore her across and oh, I don't like children. And then she had to say something to Imogen and she was all in green. She was, look at me, Imogen. I am green. And there's a pause. And my daughter was being rather articulate, even as a little girl. And she went, I am blue, because she was in blue. Actually, give Miriam her due. She thought that was very funny. And then she thought she was okay. Then later on that afternoon, we went into a charity shop and she said, it's awful. Is there a loo in here? And this poor lady said, well, there is, but it's only for staff. Why is that then? And later, well, I'm afraid it's just for staff. And she suddenly went, sorry, well, I need to do a poo. I'm thinking, I just thought it was very tricky, especially when you're working with someone. You couldn't just walk away. And then she said, oh, well, I suppose I'll just have to find somewhere else then to poo, and went out. And the people were, but Miriam, actually, I rather like what she said about Boris Johnson recently. I do rather agree with her on that one. She's, did you see that back in America?
You know, I didn't. I watch the news now as little as possible.
Yeah.
Because here it's 24/7 and it's, you know, it's insane time. Yeah,
We haven't asked you about Vera Lynn, though. What is, have you worked with Vera Lynn at all?
I've not worked with Vera. I met her originally. There was an organization called Stars Organization for Spastics, where we used to, they ran, this organization ran three, I think it was, homes for spastic children. And what we did was organize, well, there was a committee, and from Vera was one of the committee, and Sylvia Sims and a lot of other people. And I just helped out at things and went to their meetings. And we used to do fundraising events, and then we'd help at the fundraising events with selling programs, talking to people, doing different things like that. So I worked with her for about 4 years on that. But, and I also know her daughter. We've been friends for years. I don't see her very much, but that was my connection with her. I've never worked with her, but I do love her voice. Mm. I think she was, and her songs, which are so wonderful. And I'd mentioned to Alex that there was a song I loved of hers called Coming In on a Wing and a Prayer.
Oh, I love that too.
Yeah. And it's based on a true story, of course. It is a true story. It's exactly what happened. And I just love that song, as well as a lot of others. But that, I thought, if there's a courage and hope and determination and you win at the end, that really is.
Yeah.
They had nothing except one wing and a body and someone, you know, a plane and someone in it.
I saw a documentary recently to celebrate her birthday, and I thought she came across brilliantly, absolutely, very down to earth as well, very, very humble.
Oh yeah, she was very down to earth, quite bossy when she was in the thing we were doing to get, but she got everything organized and everything.
And let's face it, Annette, even Dame Vera Lynn wouldn't have actually started talking about needing to do a poo, would she? I mean, there's a certain sort of level
exactly. She definitely wouldn't, she really wouldn't. That wasn't her way, no.
I think the good news is that in the magic of post-production, if the post-production fairies are with us, then we will have at least two, possibly three, Vera Lynn moments straddling this particular sequence, which I think has been another...
The Ring and the Prayer is a very uplifting, makes me cry with about that.
Yeah, it's just wonderful, particularly when you know it's actually a story.
Yes.
Actually, it happened. It did, and it was successful. They landed.
In so many ways, and that's so similar to these programs that we do on a weekly basis. You know, we it's amazing. Actually, get to the end of the video. Phones go off, internet connections go slow. We get all sorts of other bits and pieces there.
My phone goes. I'm so sorry.
it's the way forward, Sarah. As you are our senior, our head girl in terms of this particular side of things, would you like to put those last two questions to Annette, please? Off you go.
Annette, have you had a good radio link-up?
I certainly have. Very interesting. And actually, it's great to see people.
Isn't it?
I love radio, but this, I know it's radio, so you used to use your voice, you know, but it's really interesting to be able to see the people. You know, I see you, I see Alex, I see his eyes widen a little bit when I mentioned a song there, like The Agreement. So I've got a tiny little picture at the top of the screen. I can see you.
it's the way, it's the interactivity. And I have to say, once again, Annette, you have the award for most impressive San Diego backdrop there. It's wonderful. I'm almost expecting a scene from the High Chaparral to take place before our eyes.
Can you actually see any of the canyon out there? Can you see mountains there?
Not as yet. We see the plants. I think that's okay. Oh, well, there we are. That's almost as impressive as dare I say, at Wimbledon, Sarah.
I think a little bit of modern art behind and a rather sort of decadent lunch.
Oh, there we are. It's wonderful.
It's such a privilege and an honour to meet you in this radio link, and I shall go away and be dead chuffed that I managed to be able to talk to you today. Thank you.
Meet you and talk to you.
So I take it then, Annette and Sarah, you will both return?
Yes, please.
Fantastic. Well, Sarah, I think you're back. Actually, Sarah, not your next gig, I believe, is actually when in California time it'd be at 1:30 a.m. in the morning. So it'd be 9:30 tomorrow morning for yourself. So we'll just coordinate that. But Annette will be back. Annette Andre, a reminder, of course, that Where Have I Been All My Life is available now from online sources and indeed Quoit Media. That's quoitmedia.co.uk. fantastic book.
Alex, is it also on Kindle? Can you get it on Kindle?
Yes, it is. In fact, so just demonstrating that, it is actually there. And in fact, I was very impressed that on Kindle, apparently the typical time
Amazon
to read.
And Amazon and Coit, yes.
Typical time to read, 3 hours and 52 minutes. I could not think of a better way of spending 3 hours and 52 minutes than actually reading Where Have I Been All My Life? And Andre, Sarah Huntley, many thanks indeed.
Thank you, Alex. Thanks, Sarah. Bye.
We're coming in on a wing and a prayer. Coming in on a wing and a prayer. Though there's one motor gone, we will still carry on. We're coming in on a wing and a prayer. What a show! Lord, we're